This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for September 2017. Well, the great thing is we don't have to wait quite so long for it to get dark. When it does so, if it's clear, we have a lovely skyscape to observe. High, slightly to the west of south, we have the summer constellations, Cygnus the Swan, with the bright star Deneb forming the tail of the swan, and a much fainter, lovely double star, Albireo, forming its head. Above Albireo is Vega, the brightest star in Lyra, and below them both is Altair in Aquila, those three bright stars making up the summer triangle. Just up to the left of Altair is a sweet little constellation, Delphinus the Dolphin. Moving further over towards the southeast after nightfall, we have the constellation of Pegasus, the upside-down winged horse. The four stars that make up the great square of Pegasus give us a lead as to finding the largest and most brightest of the nearby galaxies, M31 in Andromeda. If one starts from the top left star, Alpha Rats, of the square, which actually is Alpha Andromedae, moving over to the left, one bright star, turning a little bit to the right, to the next bright star, then sharp right, there's one medium bright star, and the same distance, again, one might see the hazy glow of the Andromeda Nebula. An alternative way of finding it is to look above Andromeda to the W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia. The right-hand little V actually points down pretty closely towards Andromeda. So that's two ways of finding it. And it is a nice thing to look at with a small telescope or binoculars, and on a really dark, transparent night, you can see it with your eyes. If you actually carry on backwards, the same distance below the two stars I mentioned to turn right, you come into the constellation of Triangulum, and there is the galaxy M33. It's face on and very faint, but with binoculars on a dark, again, transparent night, you have a chance of picking it out. What about the planets? Well, Jupiter is now 5 months after opposition, but it can still be seen very low in the southwestern sky after nightfall, lying at an elevation of some 10 degrees about 45 minutes after sunset. But by month's end, it'll be at just 4 degrees elevation at dusk. With a magnitude of minus 1.7 and an angular size of 31 arc seconds, it will be at its dimmest and smallest during this year's apparition, and really is too low for any reasonable telescopic views. At the start of September, Spica, Alpha Virginis, lies some 4 degrees to its lower left, and Jupiter, which is then moving obviously eastwards, passes some 3 degrees to the upper right of Spica on September the 11th. Sadly, now moving down towards the lower part of the ecliptic, next year it will only have an elevation of about 25 degrees when due south, and then for the following 2 years, an elevation of just 18 degrees. So it's not the best time in the next few years, sadly, for observing Jupiter. Well, Saturn came into opposition back on June the 11th, and so will be seen in the southwest as darkness falls. It sets late evening. It shines initially at magnitude plus 0.4, falling to plus 0.5 during the month. It has an angular size of some 16.5 arc seconds. With an angle of 26.8 degrees inclination to the line of sight, the rings are virtually as open as they ever can be. Their maximum tilt at 27 degrees will come in October, the first time since 2002. It is sad that Saturn, now lying in the southern part of Ophiuchus between Sagittarius and Scorpius, only reached an elevation of 17 degrees above the horizon when due south. so hindering our view of this most beautiful planet? Well, Mercury has now become a morning object and will form a very tight grouping with Mars and Regulus in Leo on the morning of the 5th. They will lie about 15 degrees below Venus. Binoculars will be needed to observe them in the bright twilight, but please do not use them after the sun has risen. Rising in elevation during the first part of the month, by the 10th, it will have brightened to zero magnitude and lie just half a degree to the lower right of Regulus. Mercury will reach its greatest elongation, some 18 degrees from the sun, on the 12th, its best morning apparition this year. On the 14th, it lies 11 degrees to the lower left of Venus, whilst, before dawn on the 16th, it closes to just 0.3 degrees from Mars. In the final week of September, moving back towards the sun, it'll be lost in the sun's glare. Well, Mars has also now become a morning object at the start of its new apparition, lying in Leo and still not easily seen in the pre-dawn sky. As I've said, it forms a tight grouping of Mercury and Regulus on the 5th, some 15 degrees to the lower left of Venus. During the month, Mars has a magnitude of 1.8, an angular size of just 3.6 arc seconds, so you could not expect to see any details on its salmon pink surface. As the month progresses, Mars rises higher in the sky before dawn and moves closer to Venus, which is now moving back towards the sun. Finally, Venus. Well, Venus is visible in the east before dawn this month, rising around 2 hours before sunrise. Its magnitude remains at minus 3.9 as its angular diameter shrinks from 12.4 to 11.2 arc seconds. However, at the same time, its illuminated phase increases from 84 to 91%, which explains why its magnitude doesn't change. Well, finally, what highlights do we have this month? Well, September is a good month to find the globular cluster in Hercules and spot the double-double in Lyra. And on the night sky page, just put in night sky Jodrell into Google or another search engine, then you will find a chart showing you how to find them. M13 in Hercules is the best globular cluster visible in the northern sky, whilst close to the bright star Vega in Lyra is the multiple star system Epsilon Lyrae, usually called the double-double. With binoculars, a binary star is seen. When observed with a telescope and actually good seeing conditions, each of those two stars is revealed to be a double star, hence the name. Well, September is also a good month to observe Neptune with a small telescope. It comes into opposition, that's when it's nearest the Earth, on the 2nd of September, so we'll be well placed to spot this month. Its magnitude is plus 7.9, so Neptune, with a disk just 3.7 arc seconds across, should be easily spotted in binoculars lying in the constellation of Aquarius. And on the night sky page, I've given two charts to help you find its location. As I've mentioned, on September the 5th before dawn, Mars, Mercury and Regulus form a tight grouping, close to Regulus in Leo. Now, a very low eastern horizon will be needed to spot them, probably requiring the use of binoculars. But please, do not use them after the sun has risen. And the point about using binoculars is that the magnification they produce reduces the effective brightness of the pre-dawn light, but leaves the brightness of the planets and Regulus the same, so they become more obvious. On September the 12th, before dawn, the moon closes onto the Hyades cluster in Taurus. On September the 16th, again before dawn, three planets can be seen below the moon. A thin crescent moon will be seen high above Venus, Mars and Mercury. And lying between Venus and Mercury is the star Regulus in Leo. On September the 26th, after sunset this time, Saturn will be seen below a crescent moon. And on the moon, the nights of the 12th and the 28th of September are good nights to observe the Alpine Valley, which then lies close to the Terminator. You need to have, obviously, a telescope. You'll see, close to the limb, the Apennine mountain chain that marks the edge of Mare Imbrium. Towards the upper end, you should see a cleft across them called the Alpine Valley. It is about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. I have a close-up image on the night sky page which shows a thin rill running along its length, but that's actually quite a challenge to observe. Over the next two nights, following the 28th, the dark crater Plato and the young crater Copernicus will come into view. This is really a very interesting region of the moon.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's Claire Brotherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the September Jodcast from Space Place at Carter Observatory here in Wellington, New Zealand. After what felt like a long, cold, wet winter here in Wellington, September marks the start of spring in the Southern Hemisphere. As we head towards the equinox on the 23rd of the month, we see a rapid change in our daylight hours, with our days getting longer and our nights shorter. Equinox means equal night, because we have the same number of hours of daylight and the same number of hours of darkness at this time of year. By the end of September, the sun won't be setting until nearly 7:30. Jupiter is now our evening star, sitting in the west after dark. As we move around on our inside orbit, we're leaving Jupiter behind on the opposite side of the sun. At the beginning of September, it sits just below and to the right of Spica, and sets shortly after 9 p.m. But it moves slowly towards the top right of Virgo's brightest star over the course of the month. And by the end, both will be setting by the time twilight ends. A thin 2-day-old crescent moon sits just below and to the right of Jupiter on the evening of the 22nd. In contrast to last September, when all 5 naked-eye planets performed a planetary dance, there is only one other planet visible unaided in our evening skies this month. Stunning Saturn sits high in the north as the sun sets. Scorpius Temetawamaui sits to its left almost vertical, with its tail curling up close to the zenith. Whilst you won't be able to see anything from ground-based telescopes, it's an exciting time for our exploration of Saturn this month. After nearly 2 decades, including 13 years orbiting the ringed planet, the groundbreaking Cassini spacecraft will complete its grand finale when it plunges into the atmosphere of Saturn on the 16th of September, New Zealand time, sending vital new data to the end. The Cassini-Huygens mission has revolutionized our knowledge and understanding of the planet, its stunning rings and dynamic moons. The mission has revealed the complexity of Saturn's ring system, identified numerous new moons, and provided some of the most stunning images of the solar system that we've ever seen. It has found liquid oceans and a thick atmosphere on Titan with conditions that may be similar to early Earth. An exploration of the icy moon Enceladus has revealed a hotspot at the southern pole, icy jets spewing out from the surface, and a vast ocean below the ice. Whilst there are only 2 evening planets you can see with your own eyes, Neptune is also in our evening skies, with Uranus joining it before 10 p.m. Both can be picked out with binoculars, and you may even notice a greenish colour to Uranus, but Neptune will be indistinguishable from a faint star. Now is the best time to look for the 8th planet, though, as it reaches opposition on the 5th of the month, when it will be directly opposite the Sun in the sky and at its highest in the north at midnight. At around this time, the planet will also be at its closest and brightest, shining at magnitude 7.8. and is sat less than a degree just below and to the right of the 3.8 magnitude star Lambda Aquarii, but you'll still probably need a detailed finder chart to spot it. Unfortunately, the full moon passes close to Neptune just after opposition, so it may be easier to find a week or two later. The bright stars Vega and Canopus mark north-south around dusk this month, guiding our eye to the bright band of the Milky Way passing high overhead. Along with the nearby bright stars of Deneb in Cygnus the Swan and Altair in Aquila the Eagle, Vega forms part of the Winter Triangle, as seen here in the Southern Hemisphere. Vega, in the constellation of Lyra, is the fifth brightest star in the sky, and at just 25 light-years away, one of the brightest in our local neighbourhood. It is also one of the best studied, and is used extensively by astronomers for photometric calibration. It was the first star outside our Sun to be photographed as early as 1850. Alta is also easy to spot, lying along the band of the Milky Way, midway up the northern sky after dark. Alta spins at almost 300 kilometers per second, so fast that it is not spherical but flattened at the poles. Deneb is harder to see, just skirting along the horizon from northern parts of the country. Between Vega and Alta is Albireo, or Beta Cygni, the beak star, marking the head of the swan. Although it appears as a single star to the naked eye, Albireo is in fact a double star and a lovely sight in a small telescope, or even a good steady pair of binoculars, because of the easily seen contrast in colour between blue and gold components. The two stars are 35 arc seconds apart, meaning they are separated by 60 times the diameter of our solar system, and may take 100,000 years to orbit each other. Albireo is best viewed using low magnification, as the colours stand out more clearly when the stars appear close together. Try defocusing your telescope a little to spread out the star's light, so the colours are easier to see. A similar distance to the other side of Altair is Alpha Capricorni, the third brightest star in the zodiac constellation of Capricorn the Goat, despite having the Alpha designation. Alpha Capricorni is commonly known as Algeidi, meaning the kid, and is another double star, but this time the effect is purely coincidence. Although these stars appear close together, this is just a line-of-sight effect, with the two components positioned at 109 and 690 light-years away. Alpha 2, or Secunda Geidi, is the closer and brighter of the two at magnitude 3.58. It is itself a triple star system, with the primary component an evolved G-type star with twice the mass, 8 times the radius, and 40 times the luminosity of the Sun. Alpha 1, or Prima Geidi, is a supergiant over 5 times more distant, but at 5 times the mass and over 1,000 times the luminosity of the Sun, it is only slightly fainter in our skies at magnitude 4.3. Alpha Geidi is also a multiple star in its own right, comprising another evolved G-class star with at least 3 faint companions nearby. Prima and Secunda are located 6.6 arc minutes apart, around one-fifth the diameter of the full moon, and can be separated fairly easily even with the naked eye. To the southeast of Capricornus is the faint constellation of Pisces Austrinus, the southern fish, with its only bright star Fomalhaut marking the mouth of the fish. Fomalhaut is the 18th brightest star in the night sky, and the only lonely bright star in its vicinity. Along with TW Pisces Austrini and LP 87610, Fomalhaut is part of a triple star system, one of the widest triple stars known. The primary Fomalhaut A and secondary TW Pisces Austrini or Fomalhaut B are separated by a couple of degrees on the sky, and in reality are almost a light year apart, but they are at a similar distance from Earth and co-moving through space. The third component, Fomalhaut C or LP 87610, is a faint red dwarf which is separated even further, some 2.5 light years from Fomalhaut A and 3.2 light-years from Fomalhaut B. It wasn't until 2013 that Fomalhaut C was found to be part of the system, as it sits over 5 degrees away on the sky. Fomalhaut has been the subject of some controversy over the past few years. In 2008, astronomers identified a massive planet orbiting the star. But what was really exciting about this detection was that this planet, called Fomalhaut B, was the first to be discovered by direct imaging, appearing as a small cluster of pixels in images from the Hubble Space Telescope. Follow-up observations, however, failed to confirm the planet and left many doubting its existence. It took until 2012 before Fomalhaut B was independently detected and confirmed. Its controversial past has earned it the nickname the Zombie Planet, a planet resurrected from the dead. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.